Good morning and welcome to Sportin' Life with Sam Kekovich and Leon Weegaard. Sam, I rang you yesterday about doing a thing on, just a little project I took on myself.
Yes.
My water polo playing started at Q, the Q water polo team. And that, you know, they went on and on and on. So I was thinking, whatever happened to all those guys? You know, so I started making a list of them all.
Yeah.
Now, these are guys I haven't seen for 40 or 50 years. So I made the list and I rang my brother and I sent it to him. He added to it. And it's bloody good. It's bloody good for the soul to do it.
It is. And you got me thinking last night. I went through the days when I first arrived at North Melbourne and the North Melbourne playing list. And some of those obscure names.
Yes.
You know, I was wondering, you know, 50 years have elapsed. Where's all that time
Where
gone?
Are they?
Where are they? And I wonder what they're doing. Are they still with us? And it is an excellent exercise. In fact, I'm going to pursue it a bit more and I'm going to make an effort to really find out. I'm sure the North Melbourne Football Club keeps a record of those people, but I know a couple of good friends of mine that I used to, for argument's sake, when I first arrived as a kid, we used to flat in those days, you know, share flats.
Yes, yes.
Like blokes like Michael Redenbach, Brian Backhouse. You know, not names anyone would know, but I know because, you know, they were mates of mine at North Melbourne. And funnily enough, I ran to Michael Redenbach at the Bank Shank grand final luncheon. Brian Backhouse I haven't seen for eons. You know, Kevin Sykes is another name from Benalla.
Same family.
Same family. There's a Sykes family from Benalla.
Well, our Sykes at Fitzroy is a vet.
Exactly, exactly.
Same and family. A member of Parliament.
Yes, Kellerec Waite. And they're the names Vinnie Doolan, you know, and Aubrey Wodonga.
Always a Doolan at North Melbourne. Well, one bloke on my list was a fellow named Dick Stanley, and he was a goalkeeper. And Dick Stanley was a QC. And I noticed that he died, and so I rang his wife, and we had a good chat about his water polo. He was always second banana because we had Mick Withers, who was Australia's best by a mile.
Yeah,
but Dick was always there. He's a good bloke.
I remember a former talk about Fitzroy great, but he's also played a very significant role in North Melbourne's first ever premiership. Of course, Billy Stephen, who was assistant coach of Barass in those days. And there was no finer man in the world than Bill Stephen. I remember ringing Bill, I think it was his 90th birthday, because he passed away.
Yes.
His wife passed away. He passed away, I think, about a year or two ago.
Yeah, it'd be less than a year ago.
Yes, and I rang him. He was so delighted to hear from me. And I hadn't spoken to Bill for, maybe 30 years.
A total gentleman.
The epitome of decency.
Like the beer.
Loved the beer.
Beer was his drink. No, none of that fancy stuff.
No fancy, but he's a riveting dialogue. He's a great conversationalist. He loved his footy. He knew it backwards. He reminded me of the old guard, like Len Smith, Norm Smith, those people, you know. You know, just a fantastic football brain. But great company. Great company.
Well, another guy we got today is good company, and we're about to lose his company because he's going to Hong Kong. And I refer to David Eustace, who, of course, is...
The other half of?
We'll just talk about David today, otherwise we'll dominate it, won't we? Kieran Liston.
Who's an accountant of the highest order. Right. And then you're talking about Kieran Maher in the same breath.
Before I balls us any further up, let's say hello to David Eustace. Hey, David, thanks for joining us. That's very good of you.
Leon, morning. Kaka. Thanks very much. Thanks very much for having me on.
You're a bit of an athlete, David, under it all. You do a bit of running.
I listen to this podcast, Running, which means I get through about one episode a month. But it's always enjoyable listening, so it's a privilege to be on.
Well, yours is a fantastic background. I mean, it's going back to the, I suppose, the world headquarters for thoroughbreds, Newmarket, right through to where you are now. You're still a young bloke, so it's been a fantastic trip.
Yeah, it has. So, honestly, Leon, to think where I am now and where I'm about to go, could not have thought that sort of 10 years ago when I booked a one-way flight to Australia. But as you say, I touched on it, it started in Newmarket, and I was very lucky to grow up there. Dad trained and trained successfully for 35 years, and my brother's since taken over, but it was a great place to learn how to ride and train a horse and be amongst staff and run a business, and that's to be in good stead. And then I've had, you know, great opportunities here in Australia.
Talking about running a business, Sam and I got a small percentage, of course, in Stern Idol and a couple of others in your stable. So we've had a chance to have a look at you in operation. And it is really an enormous business. So I don't know how you keep tabs on all of that. What have you got? Ballarat?
Ballarat. We've got Cranbourne. We've got Fingal, which is the Cape Shank. And they're the three main bases in Victoria. And then in Sydney, we've got Warwick Farm. Up in Newcastle at Bob's Beach, there's 35 horses, and there's 75 at Bong Bong, which is sort of an hour and a half south of southwest of Sydney. So, yeah, look, it's a big operation, like in any business. You're nothing without good systems and structure and staff, and that's what we've got. And obviously, a lot of work goes in behind the scenes. So, you know, it's grown exponentially, really, since I started with Kieran 7 years ago, and there was 45 at work. So it's been great to be a part of it.
David, you come from impeccable lineage. There's no doubt about that from your Newmarket days. You know, David Orton for, you know, what, 87 to 2006. Then, of course, you got your brother Harry. And then, of course, you had a terrific apprenticeship under a lot of Australian trainers too, in Peter Moody, Snowden's, and then ultimately with Kieran Maher. So you've had a great background, and it's no fluke that you'd be invited by someone like the Hong Kong Jockey Club. Do you regard the Hong Kong Jockey Club as the mecca of racing in terms of the jurisdiction?
I think the way it's set up, Kekka, and for the participants, the trainers, the jockeys, it certainly is in that the pressure is off the financials, I suppose. You're not running a business. Your staff are employed by the jockey club. The owners pay the jockey club. And your focus is solely on performance and results. Now, that creates a very competitive environment and is high pressure. It's not, I'm not going up there and thinking that the job is done and no one is going up there thinking that, whether they're a rider or a trainer, because, you know, for that reason is that you're not making any money by just having horses in work. They've got to perform. They've got to win. And the owners in particular expect results quickly. So you've got to hit the ground running, so to speak. At the same time, you've got to accept that it's not going to happen overnight. You can't set up a stable overnight. But I just think it'll be, yes, a great experience. It's a privilege to be invited, largely for the reasons explained. And it's racing twice a week instead of every day. I mean, it'll be a different sort of pace, and my time will be invested in other things, still racing, but probably more client relations and entertainment and the actual, you know, you're 70 in work, that's your maximum. And that's what I like about it is that you can get your number and then you can focus on improving the quality. And if you asked any trainer, if they could train 70 good horses, you would. But, you know, in most other jurisdictions, you've got to train 200 horses to train 20 good ones. Whereas, you know, because you're limited in Hong Kong, you can then focus on quality, which obviously is what everyone wants to deal with, is good horses.
Now, David, just for the benefit of the uninitiated, I know how the operation in Hong Kong works. It's vastly different as we know it here in this in the Southern Hemisphere here, and even probably the Northern Hemisphere. The money is absolutely unbelievable, the amount of money that's turned over on these races. The money is huge, but more importantly, all the horses are allocated to you. You don't go out. However, you can improve your stock by getting horses sent over to you from Australia, can you not, individually?
Yeah, that's right. You're right, apart from the allocation. I mean, I won't go over there and be given horses just because the new trainer needs boxes filled. I've got to generate interest and support. Now, I think generally, the new trainer comes in and you know, like any sort of change, people, there's intrigue. So thankfully, there's been good feedback, but I've still got to hustle and bustle. And
yeah, you've got to do that.
Horses myself.
But also,
go on.
But also, the other thing is you've got to hustle and bustle and create your own market. I understand that. And the other thing is that people don't understand about Hong Kong racing. The worst thing you can possibly do is keep running second and third all the time, because there's a small window of opportunity granted to each horse that gives you a window of success. Is there not?
Yeah, that's right. It's a very limited handicap system. It's very tight. And yeah, when it is your day and you're ready to go, you either hopefully win and get your head in front, or you want to finish fifth or sixth. Because if you finish second or third, as you say, your rating goes up, and that means your jockey will be carrying more weight the next day, which makes it harder to win. And if you've got a consistent performer who's not getting their head in front, you can then almost make it impossible for you to actually get your head in front. So, you know, it's a game of chess a bit too. And, you know, that's not unlike the handicap system in the UK. And it's something that I'm familiar with. I'll have to familiarise myself with it, obviously, having been here for 10 years, but it's not alien to me.
Just back to the business side of it, David, the lack of having to worry about bad debts must be a weight off the shoulders.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's like any sort of medium, small-sized business, it's very difficult to get staff, whatever industry it may be, and staff's always the headache. And as you say, you're paying your suppliers straight away and you're expecting your clients that cash flow, you hope it's going to come straight away too, but we know it doesn't. So, you know, we'll want for nothing there. It's in that, you know, any sort of equipment you want to improve the horse's training or well-being, you are given the facility second to none. And the reason for that, as Keke touched on, is that the betting turnover is huge. And it's all under one roof. I mean, if everyone could get together and amalgamate, and you had one club and one TAB and no private bookmakers, then we know what that could look like. It'll never happen here in Australia, but that is the system in Hong Kong, and it's managed by one corporation.
I was told once that the Hong Kong Jockey Club is the highest tax-paying organisation in the whole of Hong Kong.
Yeah, that's right. It's the highest charitable giver in Hong Kong. And, it actually, what will be interesting to see is quite how much outside of racing it is involved in, you know, its political, its relationships with mainland China continue to improve and progress, and there's a lot going on behind the scenes. So that'll be very interesting to understand and see.
Where are you going to be housed, David? At Sha Tin or Happy Valley?
Yeah, I'll be at Sha Tin.
A few Australians there.
It'll be nice. Be nice to just walk out onto the track instead of hopping in the car and being in the car for 2-3 hours a day. So, all the trainers, you know, majority of the trainers are there. It's a great crew of trainers. It'll be a lot of fun. I mean, David Hayes is there. He was there. My uncle was there 20 years ago, and he's obviously on his second stint. It's been very helpful. Jamie Richards is similar age, second season. I saw Mark Newnham at the sales, who's having his first year. He's absolutely loving it. David Hall's obviously been a picture there for a long time. I've known him for a while, so you know, there's a good crew there. So
Johnny Size, he's there.
John Size is there. Don't know John at all, but he's obviously a legend. And if I can get in his ear in any way, that would be terrific, because he obviously knows it inside out.
David, explain one thing to me. We're all horse people. We're all old punters, mug punters, whatever we are. So we love the industry. But something confuses me a bit about it, a bit like Formula One cars. You know, I grew up in the era of, you know, the Bart Cummings, the real horse people, where they could tell, you know, through the gait of a horse or its actions and its movements, you know. They could tell you a lot about the horse. But in contemporary times, and by your own admission, you made the statement that sports science and data now tells you a lot about the horse's longevity and also about its career. So how much is science now taken over from actual, you know, the ability from a trainer's horsemanship?
Yeah, well, it is growing. I think we're still scratching the surface, and at the end of the day, you're dealing with animals, and you know, computers and robots are never going to be able to control the animal. So, you know, the training and your eye is still taking center stage, but you know, more and more we're being backed up by sports science. I think where we have been able to use it more than everyone else is that we're collecting so much more data than anyone else because we've got more horses. So that allows us to see trends in training and how horses training might be dropping off. So it's more than just an aid now, it's making decisions itself. And that's probably come in the last six months, which is really exciting. So I'll be looking to use that in Hong Kong. Naturally, with a smaller team, there'll be less use of it, but we're just getting answers from it. So, you know, it's something where I'll need to feel my way. At the end of the day, I'll be having my judgment and probably for the first year or so seeing what data might be telling me in the background and then being able to use it after that.
Let's get to some personal stuff about you, David. Firstly, the move from England to Australia in the first place, what was that all about?
Well, that was just for some experience, Leon, really. You know, I grew up in Newmarket and was keen to see the world. I travelled for 6 months when I finished school. That gave me a taster. And I worked for Roger Varian, who's, you know, big trainer in Newmarket. I was assistant to him, and he sent me down here to travel two horses for the spring carnival. I was 22, and I was either going to come back and go to America, and that was the initial plan. And he said, well, you're in Australia, why don't you stay there and look for a job? And a friend of mine and now a Bloodstock agent, Will Johnson, said that there was an opening for Peter Moody, and he was the one to go with, and the year I was there, he very nearly challenged Weary for the Metro title. Actually, fell about 8 or 9 short at the time. So, had a great year with Moods. We're still pretty close. He taught me a huge amount, and unfortunately, he lost his license. If he hadn't, who knows where I'd be now? It meant that I left and went to Sydney for a year and did a year at Snowden's, and while I worked for Peter at Caulfield, I got to know Kieran a bit, not well, but enough. And Moose lost his license, so I was at Snowden's for a few months, and he rang me up and said, you know, I'm expanding largely because the results are good and the business is growing, but then all of a sudden got another 100 horses off Moose and need an assistant. So I was assistant to Kieran then, and that was 2016, I think. And it's come from there.
How did Kieran accept your decision to go to Hong Kong?
Yeah, he was very, very good. I think he, you know, he recognised the opportunity and, you know, wasn't hugely surprised that something was going to come along. I think he knew that and what it might be. You know, he could have guessed too, but he's been extremely good over the whole process. I think at the end of the day, we're both young It wasn't going to last forever. I'm keen to do something on my own. Yeah. And, I've managed to pick up a huge amount from a number of different trainers, and you naturally want to start to put your own spin on things. So, he's been terrific throughout the whole process. And, you know, the business itself will go from strength to strength. It's very well set up now.
Behind
the scenes.
David, of all the horses that you've been involved with, which is the one that you'd like to have owned?
Having a share in Gold Trip would be a lot of fun. But Hitotsu was the horse that, really cemented, cemented himself as a three-year-old, as a horse that was different. You know, a horse winning a Guineas and a Derby without a run in between in this country is unusual. And you only see the very best horses in the UK do that. And they're generally champions. So I think, he was one that was different and came right through the system. And I think it's a shame we didn't see him as an older horse, because I'm absolutely sure he'd have been a Melbourne Cup contender. He just had everything that horse. He could sprint and stay, and to be a part of that, him was terrific.
David, there's been a huge focus now by all trainers on the Northern Hemisphere horses, particularly for stayers. And that was something that was adopted, years ago by Kieran in particular, because he does a lot of purchasing. He's got a lot of agents over there that keep him informed. Is that a growing trend?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think what I hope is that, the interest and the thirst for good stayers down here will actually encourage breeders to start doing the same. And we all know the market. The Magic Millions has just finished. We know how strong that is. Those horses are generally bred to be sharp and early. But a horse like Hitotsu could breed a good stayer. And that's the key. You can breed a stayer very easily, but it's just a slow horse. And, if you can breed a good stayer with a turn of foot, then they're the horses that are getting bred up in Europe. So I think the tried horse market will continue to flourish, because actually people want a quick return regardless of whether it's a sprinter or a stayer. And you buy a horse from overseas, when it lands, it's probably 4 or 5 months off racing, 6 months off racing, and proven at a decent level. So I think the key is actually they want a quick return, not necessarily the drive that they have to be a slipper winner, they have to be a Coolmore winner. We all know that is a rarity.
I guess the ultimate endorsement of being a trainer is just what happened. You've been invited to the Hong Kong Jockey Club. What's the process you go through? How did it all evolve that all of a sudden David Eustace's name was at the forefront?
Well, I went in June for a couple of days on a work trip, and when I got there, had a look around, met some clients or potential clients, and then they got in touch when I got back and said, would you actually consider coming here to train? And, it took a few months to work out, honestly, because, obviously the opportunity and the horses and the team involved in here is not lost on me, but, change is good. And I just decided it was now or never. I've got a partner, no kids, and nothing's really keeping me here. So October was a fair bit on my mind, but I made the call. They've been very, very good. The Jockey Club, they gave me a bit of time to decide, and I'm now very looking forward to it.
And what's the extension of your contract? What sort of contractual arrangements do you have with the Jockey Club?
Well, that's a good question. It's actually only a yearly contract, but unless you do something to terminate it and do something very stupid, or you don't reach a criteria over a number of years. You have to train 16 winners every year, otherwise you're pulled in and you have a chat and potentially get a strike, and if you get three strikes, you're out. So it does happen, and there are people on the sort of on the limit at the moment. So there's 22 trainers there at the moment, and there's a maximum of 24. So actually, some internationals, all trainers, all left at the same time. So we're a couple short.
So when do you take up your contract?
I finish at the end of next week. I'm going up to Hong Kong for a few days and then go home for a couple of weeks. I start April the 1st in Hong Kong. I move April the 1st. Can't train a horse until the 1st of June. So I've got a bit of time, but it'll go quickly. And as we touched on earlier, it's plenty to get set on. You've got to get some clients and horses, and then I'll be racing sort of second week in September next year as the start of the season.
So that'll give you ample time to get married in the interim and... you know, make your partner. You there, David?
Yeah, just about. There'll be no marriage. I know that, but I'll.
What do you mean, no marriage? It's the ideal. That's the reason you're going there. You got no responsibilities, no kids.
There will be, but I'll be bloody pinned down and asked for a baby before marriage. I think.
Sam and I are flying up for the wedding.
We're coming for the. I've been saving my shekels. All those horses you've been training.
Yeah, God, I bought. You can leave your false teeth in the jar on the way.
I bought a toaster, Leon, and I bought a toaster 2 months ago.
Between us. Oh, David, you're a gem. We wish you well in Hong Kong, and congratulations on the appointment. It's a very, very big deal.
Oh, it's fantastic. Look. I'll tell you what, Leon, not only is he a superstar trainer, which is an obvious endorsement, but he's a champion bloke. He's a really good bloke, and he'll have no trouble seconding at a lot of horses because his PR abilities are fantastic. But I'll tell you what they would like you to do, David, in Hong Kong. You like their food. You like Chinese food, no doubt.
Yeah,
there's a lot of great restaurants and... well, you got some good Aussies there to steer you through some uncharted waters. David Hayes, well, he's the size of a side of a house at the moment. He's just, honestly, he's corpulent figure. He can't fit in. He looks like
Peking duck.
He looks like more than a Peking. I told you 100 times, you're the producer. Let me do the wit.
Sorry.
He's like a Peking duck. Nate, we do, as Leon said, wish you all the best. We'll follow your... career very, very closely.
Mitchelton.
Very kind.
And in case, look, Leon will be on the phone to you, and be very careful when you tip, because over there, you know what they're like, they're very stringent about tipping and having a sort of a nefarious deals on the side. I'm sure you're aware of all that.
And who would know that better than Sam?
That's right. There'll be no tips. I want to keep holding my fingers, that's for sure.
Now, in your bag as you depart, I hope you've got to put aside a little... space there for some, as you know, we operate out of the Prince of Wales Hotel here in St Kilda, which is owned by a very mutual friend of ours called Jerry Ryan, who you've trained a lot of horses for and still do. And as part of Jerry's wide range of business affairs, one of them is Mitchelton Winery, some of the great wine products of the world. And I know that you're privy to a brief libation every now and again. So all our guests are in receipt of a couple of bottles of the finest grape, which we'd like for you to take away with you. Now, Leon's in charge of that, unfortunately. So the chances of you getting it, you're better off putting your socks and undies in that area, all right?
David.
Well, I would expect Leon to drop it off personally.
Yes, we'll share it.
quite right.
That's well, I can think of no nicer person to share a bottle of wine with David than you, and we'll do it one day.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Thanks for joining us, and I hope you're enjoying your run while you're listening to this, and you're just about puffed out.
I won't have lasted that long, that's for sure.
David Eustace joining us here on Sport and Life.